Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast, where we explore the exciting intersection of modern science, ancestral wisdom, and personalized health optimization. I'm your host, Jodi DeVal, naturopath, integrative medicine expert, and founder of Revital Health Clinic in Perth, Western Australia. Each episode, we'll dive deep into cutting-edge therapies, groundbreaking research, and practical strategies to help you live your best life, having plenty of fun along the way. Whether you're keen to supercharge your energy, balance your hormones, or discover the latest biohacking trends, you've come to the right place. If you love what you hear, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow so you never miss a moment with world-leading experts and game-changing insights. It's time to unlock your full health potential. Let's go!
Revital Health is a proud member of the Health Optimization Network. Health Optimization Medicine and Practice is a 501c3 nonprofit on a mission to educate doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treating disease. If you're interested in becoming a practitioner or donating, head over to homehope.org. Revital Health Clinic is the first and only of its kind, exclusive health optimization clinic in Australia with state-of-the-art health technology protocols and personalized care, with compounded medicines made specifically for your testing individualities. To find out more, head to revitalhealth.com.au.
Welcome back to the Revital Health Podcast. Today, we're diving deep into a fascinating conversation with Dr. Xanthi Hand. She is a dedicated chiropractor, founder of Reconnect Chiropractic in Hammersley, Western Australia, with over a decade of experience. Dr. Hand specializes in family health, posture correction, and nervous system optimization. So in this episode, we talk about how Xanthi uniquely integrates chiropractic care with functional patterns to profoundly enhance movement efficiency, postural alignment, and overall well-being. So we had a fantastic conversation, quite broad. We talked about athletes, we talked about children, we talked about scoliosis. It's a big deep dive, so we hope you really enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Xanthi Hand.
Thank you. I'm stoked to be here.
And we're in our little den, so yes. We can relax and chill out on our PUMF mat. Yeah. If you get too warm, let me know, because I think it's on heat.
It is, but it's actually kind of nice. It's okay. Very relaxing.
So, Xanthi, look, the name is very interesting and it's very fitting.
Yeah.
All the work you do, So Dr. Hand, I think, was made for you.
Yeah, definitely. I was made to be a chiropractor.
You were.
Yeah.
So what inspired you then to get into chiropractic and functional patterns? So we're gonna sort of evolve in between two today. So I'll obviously follow your lead.
Yeah.
But what was initially inspiration to get into this field?
I think with chiropractic, I was a little bit lucky almost. My family always got adjusted since I was born. So I've seen a chiropractor ever since I was born, and it was just a normal part of life. We, did it every 4 weeks, and that was an unchanging thing. And then I was in high school and I just really loved human biology and loved learning about that. So I got time to kind of choose what I was going to do at university. My mum was like, oh, well, what would you like to do? And I was like, I don't know, but I want to work with the human body. Mm. And she said, well, what about nursing? And I was like, oh yeah. Could do nursing. I was a bit nonchalant, to be honest.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to be an athlete.
Yeah. Well, you've done that too.
I have, yeah. So I was like, study, whatever. And then she was like, oh, well, you could do chiropractic. And I was like, okay, well, yeah, pop that down. And she was like, well, the score for that's higher, so we'll put that at the top of your priority list.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got in and I thought, oh, yeah, well, cool. Let's do this then, And the first year I was kind of like, yep, whatever, going through it. Second year, it was when it kind of hit me. I was like, wow, this profession is amazing. I love what it's about and I love what I'm learning and I love where I can go with it and I want to do it forever.
Mm.
And I felt so grateful.
Yeah, to find something.
Yeah. That really resonated.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then from that point, I've felt the same. It's not changed.
Yeah.
But obviously I have evolved as a practitioner. And in terms of functional patterns, as you said, I have been an athlete in the past and done a lot of training, and a lot of it was, the classic kind of traditional training. And I didn't really, I was probably the least injured person on the team, but still didn't feel good in my body. Like there were still some niggles and things. And whenever I train, I was like, this just doesn't feel quite right. And so I was kind of already leaning towards trying to do functional type movement. And I was scrolling on Instagram,
Well, it can give
actually.
us, listens in. It knows what we need sometimes.
Exactly. Love the algorithm sometimes. And yeah, functional patterns came up. And the founder, Naudi Aguilar, was kind of talking about it, and I was kind of at first like, oh, this is interesting, but I couldn't refute his results. I saw the results he got, and I was like, I don't think I know of anyone else getting that many results that consistently with a broad spectrum of people. So yeah, I found the Functional Patterns Gym in Perth and started as a client. And honestly, from the first session, I was like, this again, same thing as the Cairo thing. I was like, this resonates. This makes so much sense. And I haven't really looked back.
Amazing. Yeah, it sort of just clicks in, doesn't it? And both are evolving. And that's what I love about industries like these, is that you can shift it into what works best for your clients. And chiropractic is also so broad in that you can choose different areas, different tools, different specialties within that as well. And you're always working with the multi-modality. It's the whole body, and you can't sort of separate either of them. You've got the nervous system, you've got the brain, you've got the mind, you've got then the functional patterning. And that's what really interested me about functional patterns when I first heard about it too. And I have always been a big proponent of movement, obviously. And also, all the various things I've done, never been an athlete myself, but I did compete in, dressage and high levels of horse riding. That's probably where the best I went.
That's cool.
But knowing that the importance of that movement and the patterning and how we store and hold things in the body, you can't, again, you can't separate the two. So,
Absolutely.
and that's what I love about how you've combined both. It's just so cool.
Thank you. I like it too.
So what did you find? I guess I want to sort of talk about the, I guess, myths. Maybe we need to define functional patterns as well, because many people may have not heard of this. So maybe some definitions around that. But what are sort of some of the myths that we find around movement? So let's start with sort of the movement piece. And, because it's important to know when people are at traditional gyms in bad lighting, not outside, and what functional patterns of what I know about it encompasses lifestyle, the whole lifestyle, lighting, food, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I'll let you sort of like evolve that a little bit.
Cool. Sounds good. You're 100% right. It is definitely all about lifestyle. Obviously, the central piece is the movement part, from a functional patterns point of view. But for example, the gym in Perth, there's no artificial lighting aside from red and infrared light panels if it's too dark to see. So, got that part down, and there's definitely advice around diet and whatnot. But in terms of movement, the importance of movement is, how do I say that? As humans, it's or as animals, the whole animal species is dependent on movement.
Yeah, if we
And
don't move, we stagnate and die.
exactly, exactly, 100%.
Essential to being human
Yeah, it
and
is.
a mammal
It is.
and an animal.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the only problem is there's this idea, speaking of myths, there's this idea that any movement is good. And it's like, as long as you're moving, it's okay. It's good. It's good for you. And it's good in the sense of it's definitely better than not moving at all. Because as you said, we need it. And if we don't do it, then we die. But it's not to say that it is the best for you. So I even for myself as a practitioner prior to coming across functional patterns, I used to say this. Well, people would be like, what kind of exercise should I be doing? And I'd be like, well, what do you like? Is it swimming? Is it tennis? Is it yoga? Like, what do you like doing? And they're like, well, I don't mind, I don't know, playing handball. And I'm like, cool, do that. And you know, it's not to say that you can't ever do any other types of movement, but I think the idea that doing any movement is what you need and is what is best for you is inaccurate. The quality and the type of the movement does actually make a huge difference. And if you think about something like mixed martial arts or boxing, which, to be honest with you, the movement patterns of that are actually quite sound. But there's, if you're doing that all of the time and your nervous system is going into that fight or flight state a lot of the time, under poor lighting with a massive crowd who's yelling at you to bash the other guy's head in or whatever it is, and you're constantly doing that and not any other type of movement, I think then that's going to have detriment. And the opposite end of the spectrum, if you're constantly only ever doing yin yoga, where you're lengthening all your tissues to no end, quite literally, then it's going to be difficult for your system to move with tension and elastic recoil in the way that it should. And that, I think also the other problem with that is the lack of connection between how that can affect your physiology and your neurology and you as a, your personality even. So I think that link is also missing. And so, it's huge.
It is huge. And I think, you know, for someone like myself sitting with clients, and you alluded to this, is that sometimes it's just you need to get someone moving somehow, because the reality is that most people are sitting down in a box, fake lighting, in front of poor lighting screens, and moving half an hour just to have their, you know, walk their dog around the block.
Yes.
And there's also this association that exercise has to be hard. You have to be straining. And I've got to prepare for this because it's going to be like dire if I'm involving myself into it. And it's something that I have to have punishment from.
Yes.
And it's breaking the stigma around movement.
Yep.
And I feel like that's the gym culture. Obviously, it's like you got to work hard, you got to get the gains, you got to, you know, smash your body as hard as you can.
Yep.
And then come out of it and recover. And it's all just about this cycle. So, and I, you know, early days, I put it to, you know, my clients, I'm like, well, what happens if movement's actually enjoyable? You just need the tools, the tricks. You can actually have fun, enjoy, you know, you're outside, you're doing, it's incidental movement, but you're actually getting gains from that. Why do we have to punish ourselves?
Yes.
And so then it comes back to that, you know, like our nervous system, we naturally need to move, but our nervous system doesn't need to be punished for it and then have detriment later on. You know, this culture of like instant gains and only thinking of the now.
Yeah.
And we're having benefit out of the now, but we never really think more forward than that. And it's nice to have hindsight once you get into those problems, but then it's much more difficult to fix.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Especially because that cycle tends to be quite addictive.
Yeah.
Where it's like dopamine driven and adrenaline driven. Yeah. It's like, oh, I've caused all this pain.
Yes.
Basically, I've put myself through the ringer.
Yep.
And now I'm like, oh,
yes,
I want to do it again.
Yeah. 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 Why do I?
Yeah.
But I do.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Yeah. It's a bit absurd, but it is how it rolls. So
So like diving into the different patterns that you're seeing, obviously you get to see both sides. You get to see how people move, and then you get to see the structural and the functional issues from a chiropractic point of view. So what are the main things that you see as commonality right now where we are in society with people's bodies? Like what's the issues that we are seeing?
Cool. Great question. I'm seeing a lot of flaccidity, like a lot of hypermobility, lack of tension, which is funny because a lot of people are like, oh, I feel so tight. And I think there's, again, this kind of misunderstanding of how a lack of tension or the right kind of tension, or at least let's call it stability, leads to a decrease in mobility because your body's saying it's not safe. It's not safe to move. So we need to tighten as much as we can. But it can't do that the way that it normally would because there's a disconnect either in the nervous system or in their movement patterns that create this like length in their tissues instead of the right tension. So to create that tension, we get things like knots.
Yep.
And then we might have injuries that create like little scar tissue areas and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the fascia tightens up as well. And yeah, so I think from a body perspective, that's one thing that I'm seeing a lot of. It's like this combination between like, flaccid movement, hypermobility, hyperflexibility, and the desire to create more mobility because they feel stuck, because they are at one level. And that has a huge impact in terms of neurology. So a lot of people, I mean, you probably see it as well, a lot of people coming in saying things like, oh, I've been diagnosed with ADHD.
There's such a common, I was going to mention that, that you've got that link between hypermobility and ADHD, and it's becoming more and more and more apparent.
Yes,
Yeah.
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. It's like taking over the world, it feels like sometimes. And then the other part of that is the anxiety, the link between hypermobility and anxiety, and the three of those things just spiral, basically.
Food. Yep.
Yeah, feed each
Yep.
other. So then, yeah, it's and I'm seeing it across many different like generations or age groups, which is interesting, like more so in the younger generations. But still, it's quite fascinating. And I think to myself, in terms of the kind of lives we live, the way society is structured these days kind of feeds that. And so it can be really, really difficult for people to feel like they have control. What's that word?
Yeah, an ability to make change quick,
Yes.
like, because again, it's an overwhelming concept. And this is where I was thinking as you're saying this, is when you're trying to guide people to make the right effort, it's really hard, because when you're talking about these topics and how to fix a body and a person, there's so many layers, there's so many multitudes. And so the foundational layer is actually how we're living, like you said, and what we're doing and what we're eating. And it's the daily habits and the daily consumptions of including information, TV, media, all of those daily consumptions that make up for the greater picture. And it's really hard to change those daily consumptions. And then you've got movement patterns on top of that. And then you've got ability for us to change those movements, but you have to go through hard work and shifts in thinking and changes on how we do that on a rotational automatic basis. And that's can be very overwhelming, because then you don't know where to start.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can change your light environment. We were talking about it before. You can have the red lights at night, you can do all these things, you can get more grounding, you can get sunlight, you can remove grains or inflammatory foods, you can drink more water, you can probably hydrate the body. But then moving correctly and moving through those stuck points brings out emotions and more anxiety for some people. So it can be so overwhelming. And so I guess, that I think the functional patterns really brings out, I know that you have to do almost like the course before you come in, or do like a semi familiarization around what functional patterns is before you even start with a trainer. And then moving into that, then you're getting told and supported how you need to move for your particular body to move through those stuck points or stagnation points, and then around how to live your life at the same time. So it takes time, these things. And I think
Definitely.
that's the issue, is that people aren't willing to take time
Yes.
because they want instant.
Yep.
But then the accumulation of the changes over time, you start here, and then a year down the track, you're like, wow, I've reached this point.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. But it didn't feel like much because you're making small increments along the way.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I guess my question in my big rambling there was,
Accurate rambling. It was very good rambling.
how do you structure this for someone? Because that's the biggest thing, isn't it? Like, how do we substantiate and make change in people?
Absolutely. And this is the thing, like you say, there are so many things that you can do, that you could do, but it's actually not about what you could do. It's what somebody can manage to do. I was talking about this with my colleague just the other day, and we were talking about how when somebody comes in who struggles with ADHD type symptoms and anxiety and hypermobility, and how you can literally read their body language, their micro body language, as to what kind of person they are. You don't even have to ask them any questions to know what kind of person they might be and the kind of things that they would do. But it's about toeing the line almost in terms of when somebody comes in to get adjusted or to functional patterns with you. or as a practitioner in general, really, you're trying to figure out their priorities, first of all, what they're trying to get out of it, and leverage off that. So it's like if somebody comes in and goes, I just want to get out of pain, which I hear all the time. I
yeah.
love that.
Yes.
And I think to myself, man, you could get so much more than that if you
yeah.
just knew. And
Yeah.
And so then you're trying to go, yeah, cool, I can help you get out of pain. And then, you know, some other stuff might happen too, and kind of plant the seed and lead them down this path without being too confrontational. Because as you said, it is hard work. It's difficult. Like I said earlier, the, you know, society isn't really geared towards, well, it's geared towards, you know, this ADHD anxiety state. So it's not really geared towards us bettering ourselves and getting out of that. And so you're trying to take somebody on baby steps and go, okay, like you did this, well done. You've done that. And now we're going to just push a little bit more and do this. I think, so there's not really, you know, a recipe, but it's kind of like, okay, like you come in, you're really driven, you've already made some changes prior to coming in.
Yeah.
Like that's great. So you're already on the path. I can probably give you a little bit more to work on than I would somebody who's like brand spanking new and has no idea.
Yeah.
Because it just to one thing to correct you on, with functional patterns, you can just come straight in and have a one-on-one session straight away. But there is the option also to do, well, with some practitioners, you need to do the course beforehand.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. That's good. Good clarity.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think it's meeting the person where they're at.
Yeah.
And then guiding them. It's again, it's just personalized. You know, we call it as personalized here, and that's what we always also do, because that's the biggest changes you can get with the people. There's not a recipe.
Yeah.
But I guess there's a, you know, a layering that needs to happen. Like if they don't have this, well, you got to start there. And if they have that, then you got to start here.
Yes.
And so then there's that layering perspective of bringing that change for that person.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people who are probably on the lower end of the layering, or new to these kinds of concepts, I think starting with the physical is a really easy place to start.
Yes.
From like
it can be understood.
Yeah, in terms of chiropractic and functional patterns, because they are physical things.
Yeah.
Somebody can come in and I can just adjust them.
Yes.
And be like, well done. That's what we worked on this today.
Yeah.
And with functional patterns, I'll be like, cool, we're doing this and we're working on these muscle groups, or, you know, trying to create this in your body.
Yeah.
And leave it at that.
Yeah.
And then they kind of start to experience it physically in their bodies, what it feels like.
Yeah.
And that can sometimes open possibilities where they're like, oh, actually, it's possible for me to not be in pain. Or it's possible for me to feel more calm, or whatever. And then that's like, that opens the door, and then you kind of go from there.
Yeah. Sets the tone for that new normal for them.
Yeah.
So then they're, open for more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The new normal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know. It's so tricky. And I come up against this in so many topics that we talk about, because it's all really at the end of the day, it's all the same thing, because we're all talking about how we can make impactful change on people that are suffering.
Yes.
And the pain piece is something that I wanted to touch on, because it is a door that you can offer for them, you know, and I know a lot of people will come to functional patterns for pain. And also like functional issues, obvious functional issues, you know, scoliosis and all these other things that they're finding that they are compensating for in their sports or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
But the pain piece is interesting, because there's so many layers to that, as you again alluded to. It was for me, you know, we get a lot of pain, and normally the pain is, yes, it's a structural, but it's not.
Correct. They're inseparable.
They are inseparable. So maybe let's dive a little bit more into pain.
Cool.
Yeah, because I know that's something obviously that you're very knowledgeable on. So with pain, it can be appearing anywhere in the body.
Yeah.
What do you see? Associations of pain in different areas. What does that mean? How do we work with this?
Yeah.
You know, association between like top of the body pain to like issues down the bottom of the body.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the pain isn't.
Yes. Totally.
You know, so it can be all different areas.
For sure. And that's something that I find often. I can remember this specific lecture with this specific lecturer at uni saying to us, if you look at the site of pain, you are often like misled. You'll be lost. And he's 100% right, because sometimes people come in and they're like, oh, I've got a shoulder, I've got shoulder pain. And then you check at the shoulder and you're like, yeah, I can understand why you have shoulder pain. It's not working properly. There's a lot of times when people come in and they say they've got pain in their foot. And, you know, you're looking at the foot and you're like, no, it's not your foot. It's your lower back. And people are like, what? Like this idea of, you know, pain is a red herring. I mean, not in the sense that if you have pain, there's definitely something wrong.
Yes.
It's consistent in that.
It's a message, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a message. But the the particulars of the message are not always clear.
It can be blurry.
It can be blurry, totally. Like it can be, you know, you can have people who have a fractured bone and they're like, ah, it hurts a bit. And then someone who's like, you know, kind of just strained a muscle and they're like, oh, like it's really painful. So the intensity, the location, the type of pain, it can mislead you. And I think also as a chiropractor, I started out very biomechanical and very structural, kind of like you have pain in your foot, it must be your L5, you know, like let's adjust your L5.
Yeah.
And over the years, thankfully, as I have grown and learnt, as we were talking about earlier, the systems of the body are inseparable and you can have organ systems that cause seemingly musculoskeletal pain. Like, you know, right shoulder, for example, can be a gallbladder issue. And so, you know, it's about, I think sometimes we think about, oh, when somebody specializes in thing because they know everything there is to know about that. The problem with that is then you're trying to silo the body, and that is not at all how we work.
Nope.
So you can often, you end up going, oh, yeah, I've got a gut problem. I go to the gastroenterologist or whatever, and they give you, you know, things to do or whatever else, and it doesn't necessarily always lead to the outcome you want because it might be being affected by something else, which they don't specialize in. So, yeah, I think pain, it's a huge problem societally. Most people are experiencing some level of pain somewhere.
It's hard to, and without specific examples, I guess, it's really hard to explain it in a way that is understandable. And I think where the medical system, you know, I don't want to make inferences or anything, but medical system has got it wrong in that it's too insular. And that's that separation of body systems. And when we look at all of the intricacies of the biological networks within the body, like you can see it's not insular. So why have we made one organ or one system to be a specialty? Because there is an interaction, and we, I guess it's expanding now, and we're knowing that that's going to become more common knowledge. But you only get to any specialty or any insular component. And then that's the limit. And then there's still issues. And then they sometimes even gets worse because then you've just ignored the rest and then imbalanced the rest. And so I think that's the same for movement, same for all these things. And I think pain can just come from lack of movement.
Totally.
Like literally, it's not just, you know, oh, I've got a pain in my lower back. It's just because you haven't moved enough in that day. Move for a whole week and walk and shift and move the body. Generally, the pain subsides. Because the body's like, excuse me, I'm stuck. Like, move.
Please.
Hello.
Got to do something about this.
I'm praying to you. So I just wanted to touch on kids because I know kids are a big part of your practice and has been and still is. Because I guess from my perspective as well, I work a lot in pediatrics, and it's more that you're seeing bigger changes, and parents and those who are carers of the children also are learning and you can make change through that. But because children are our up and coming, it's something that we have a huge opportunity to make change. And so as an example, in chiropractic and in functional patterns, you work with children in functional patterns, do you? So maybe some examples about what you're seeing in children, because I know what I see and I know in my own children. And it's not great. It's getting worse, the presentations that I see in children. So maybe some, there's some talk around that.
Well, in terms of functional patterns, the most obvious one is kind of one that I already mentioned, was that hypermobility piece. A lot of kids come in and they lack a lot of tone or tension in their bodies, and that means that they find it difficult to focus. And in a setting like functional patterns, that can be very challenging because the movements that we do are quite particular and detailed, and often slow to begin with. So that can be really challenging for kids. And I think that then, you know, flows on into their behavior as well. Like, I used to run a kids class at Functional Patterns, which was awesome and also incredibly challenging.
Yeah, it would be all different brains.
Yes. Yeah. And there was up to 8 kids in the class, which doesn't sound like a lot, but far out. It was challenging, but I would see it across most of the kids. There was this kind of lack of ability to focus, and just get it done.
Yes.
And I think that's related to that hypermobility piece.
Yeah.
And then from a chiro perspective, having a look at their nervous systems and how they're like, again, can see the hypermobility from a chiro perspective, but more so neurologically, they've got things like retained primitive reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that kind of neurological maturation hasn't really happened properly. And there's a lot of those that relate to attention issues and concentration and that kind of thing, which is, quite common.
Yeah.
It's interesting, just little side note, I test those primitive reflexes on adults as well. And it's amazing how many people have retained primitive reflexes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And then you ask them seemingly random questions, like when you're driving your car and you turn to look out the window, do you pull your arm with you? And people are like, yes.
Wow.
It's like, well, you've got a retained reflex. That's why.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just to stop you quickly there, what does that mean, or where has that come from? What's your perception? What's your theory on how is that not developed?
Yeah, fair enough. I think... There's obviously not a particular thing that happened, but there's been some kind of interruption into the development process, whether that be a stress.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it can be a stress like a really challenging birth, a really traumatic birth.
Mm.
Can be from the moment they arrived here on the other side of the tummy. And then other times it can be more like a challenging home environment. To be honest with you, I think that's probably less and less of the case these days because it's becoming more common.
Yeah.
I think it's actually more to do with the kinds of environments these kids are in. And I think screen time has a huge part to play with that.
Yep.
So, like, you know, entertaining babies and toddlers while, you know, mum or dad or carer does whatever they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the convenience of that, but I think people are missing the information on how detrimental it is.
Yeah.
They know it's bad, but they don't know
how
bad it can be and the kinds of lasting impacts it's having.
Yeah.
And that extends all the way through. I mean, even in schools now, they're starting to, you don't really write on paper anymore, you know, using computers and iPads and that kind of thing. So screens are kind of becoming an integral part. And then on top of that, you start seeing kids play games.
Yeah.
Computer games.
Yep. And spending most of their life on them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
it's
quite shocking to tell you the truth. I live in a very, obviously, aware environment because I've learned all of this over the years. And I am shocked. And we generally associate with people who are more aware of these sorts of things. And I'm still shocked at what gets let go.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the way that society has been set up. You know, the big made me so sad the other day. I dropped my daughter off. She's in year 4. They've made like computers compulsory this year. So you've got to bring in now all year 4s need computers.
Wow.
In all schools, most schools. And we'll drop her off and it's, you know, 8:40 and all the kids in her class have their laptops open and they're all sitting there. And I just went,
oh man.
And so, you know, we try to, it's the addiction and the way that kids have been set up now that it's making it also harder for parents to have boundaries around this.
Yes.
And it's exhausting. So if you don't have that energy, and we're already a strung out society of high pressure work and bad environments, and the parents who are the responsibilities will not have the strength for the boundaries and therefore just less. And it's going to get worse.
Yes.
I can see it already.
Yeah.
There is no stop that's going to initiate change that I can foresee at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's really sad.
It is.
Really sad. Because kids are unable to have manners anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're unable to be guided by adults. They're guided by screens and TVs and games.
Mm-hmm.
They're hyperreactive. Their amygdala, their dopamine drive is just on all the time. Their anxiety is getting worse.
Yeah.
And their movement is reducing. And they're not even in the sun anymore.
Yes. That's terrifying.
I can't get on my soapbox enough about all of this because I can just see how detrimental this is.
Yeah.
And we are setting ourselves up for now a whole society of illness just based on lifestyle.
Yes. Yeah.
Changes or the issues that we've created for ourselves.
Yeah. That's the part that I just find absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
We've created this entirely ourselves.
It's all us.
Yeah.
It's all us. And so it's up to us to change it.
Yeah.
But then there's obviously other big players that, at play.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's really tricky. But I think these sorts of things, this education, people speaking, you know, functional patterns, getting kids in doing this sort of work is then setting them up for the knowledge so then they can at least go, oh, I remember that.
Yes.
I felt better when I was doing that.
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah.
So slowly intuition and self-awareness will come.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yes. Surely.
Fingers crossed.
Oh man.
Because it's the only impact we can have at that level.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think just quickly on that note, I think that there's a lot of well-intended parents out there who are like, oh, I want the best for my child and I want them to do this and that.
Yeah.
A lot of them bring, well, sometimes it happens with chiropractic, particularly with mums.
Mm.
Mums are so, they're such caregivers. They love so much and they want the best for the people around them that they often neglect themselves.
Yes.
So they'll get their kids adjusted and not themselves. And the same happens with functional patterns. The parents will bring in the kids and go, oh, like, you know, I want you to train. It's going to be good for you. And then they sit and scroll on their phone
mm-hmm.
and wait for them to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, I don't think, I know that the kid never gets as good of results as if the parent's also doing it.
Yeah, living by example.
Exactly. So I think that's something, there's a responsibility of sorts for the adults in this world to lead by example.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of practitioners I refer to will have the belief system and treatment method of I'm not going to see your child before I see you.
Yes.
And I think that is brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that's also how I almost run here. I make sure parents comes in and they will always come in with their children and then they'll be listening and then I'll be like, maybe you have a session too.
Yeah.
And then it will be parents and everyone coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they all are learning and making those changes together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Versus the isolated child that now feels like they're the one that's the odd one out.
Yeah. Ostracized to some degree. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
And then there's that whole energetic part of it where it's like when everyone's on the same page and doing not the same necessarily, but moving in the same direction, making similar choices, you're feeding off each other.
Yes.
And creating that momentum, basically. That's, it's like the collective is creating a momentum forwards.
Yeah. The ease is there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's not just stuck, you know, moving against a barrier.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's such an important piece, such an important piece. And I'm seeing so much more anxiety and, you know, gut issues in children, allergies, you know, and really quite severe issues. Mm-hmm. And they can be rectified. And that's the thing, like these things can be shifted and changed.
Yeah.
But, you know, example, like I had a child come in with ADHD and poor concentration ability at school. And, you know, yes, we made changes to diet and all these other things, but they came in wearing an Apple Watch.
Yeah, wow.
And I was like, oh, you know that that's not great. You know, that's the energetic irritation going on for that child.
Yeah.
Child.
Jeez.
No need to have Wi-Fi on wrist.
Yeah.
Far out. No, thank you.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And then, but then it's this like pressure. You know, my friend has this. Can I get that, Mom?
Exactly. Yeah.
And you feel like, oh, you're a bad parent if you don't give it to them.
Yes.
Well, actually, you're a bad parent if you do give it to them.
Yeah. It's just that everyone else is making,
Yeah. It's really
feeling
tricky.
The pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is tricky. Definitely.
So, yeah. So I think, that's an important piece. Flick to quickly scoliosis.
Yep.
Because I see a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe just a bit of an understanding of scoliosis itself, and then what that shifting and movement and chiropractic work goes into that.
Okay.
And so what sort of like what do you see in terms of the ranges of scoliosis? Because I feel like it's becoming a little bit more either more diagnosed or more aware or more apparent.
Yeah. Probably a bit of all of those.
Okay. Yeah.
I personally think I don't know the stats on it, so I can't say with certainty. But from a chiropractic and movement point of view, scoliosis, there's two types of scoliosis. There's traumatic and idiopathic.
Yeah.
Traumatic is anytime you have an accident. So some people can have really severe car accidents, and as a result, their body has compensated in a way to help them to quote unquote survive in this twist or curvature through their spine. That's not super common, but it happens. There's idiopathic, which in Latin means I don't know, which I think is hilarious, but anyway.
Yeah. Who knows?
Exactly. We don't know what it is, but you have it. So there you go. So idiopathic scoliosis, which tends to be developed from childhood or through the teen years specifically. From a chiropractic standpoint, the kind of theory that has developed around that is the interference or lack of proper functioning of the gait reflexes, or basically the reflexes of the body that tell you where you are in space.
Okay.
The communication between the two of them, or you know, all of them and the brain, is not accurate. And so then the body's trying to center itself on something that's not accurate or not there. And then you end up in these kinds of odd positions. And as we know, we're habitual beings. So anytime you have this kind of repetitive movement or thing that you're doing, it becomes habit and they're somewhat ingrained from a neurological perspective.
Yeah.
So then if you have that for long enough, your tissues adapt to that. We are living tissue. Even bone is living tissue. That can change over time. You know, if you fracture a bone, you can heal it. So if you have this kind of movement pattern or this position or posture you're holding yourself in for long enough, your tissues are going to end up gearing themselves towards that. There'll be areas of tension, areas where it's longer, and areas of stiffness and those kinds of things. So yeah, it's interesting to see, again, earlier we were talking about physical presentations of people and how it relates to their emotional and emotional selves and their personalities. And with scoliosis, it tends to be, you know the saying, don't get your undies in a twist. That's kind of
that
relevant
kind of
here.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. That's what I'm seeing too.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And it's not like, that's not to have a go at anyone with scoliosis, but it just goes to show how ingrained or how incredibly important our posture and movement is, and how much it's going to affect you in all kinds of ways otherwise.
Yeah.
So from a chiropractic standpoint, you know, what we're trying to achieve is get the areas that are stuck moving again, help the myofascial system to change, and that's mainly in response to that neurological drive. So if we're able to reconnect the person's brain with their gait reflexes or the reflexes that tell them where they are in space, then it's a lot easier for their body to know where they are and operate from a more accurate center. And I've did a bit of a case study with a patient I had years ago. He was, how old was that guy, maybe like mid-30s.
Okay.
So definitely skeletally mature. Took an x-ray of him. He had chiropractic care for a long time, struggling with this, that and the other, and I was like, well, let's do some imaging. Took an image, saw he had a scoliosis. It was mild. It wasn't huge. And then started a course of care with a particular style of chiropractic or technique called NOT, or neural organizational technique, which is very neurologically driven, works a lot on those centering reflexes and other parts, but that was probably the most obvious one. Went through a course of care with him. I think it was about, can't remember exactly, maybe about 6 months later, we took another x-ray and you could see a visible change in his curvatures.
Wow.
Yeah. Which was... And he was stoked, and so was I, obviously.
Yeah,
I was very happy about that.
It's good to have confirmation of what you're doing.
Absolutely. We're on the right track.
Yeah,
so that was really rewarding. And it's cool to see, like I said, how adaptive your body is. Your tissues respond to whatever you do to them or whatever you give them.
Yeah.
And that can be overwhelming for some people, but actually it's super empowering. You have the choice constantly as to how you want your tissues to be.
Yeah.
And you just got to decide in
yeah.
that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so from a functional patterns point of view, in terms of scoliosis, we see lots of people with quite severe scoliosis come through because functional patterns has kind of got this name now.
Name for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, people come in and it's amazing to see the kinds of changes that occur. I know that there's people who have had, you know, curves of up to 50 something degrees, which is severe. Like at that point, you know, they're kind of concerned about your internal organs not functioning properly. And then going through a course of functional patterns training and their curves reducing by up to like 20 degrees.
Wow.
Which is
wow.
phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying, you know, that's how I got into it in the first place. I saw these results and I was like, man,
really?
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Are you for real? Yeah. Are you creating like
I want to see this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I want to experience it for myself. And I think scoliosis is something, you know, it's a diagnosable condition. Anything more than 10 degrees of curvature in your spine is considered a scoliosis.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest with you, we all have twists.
Yep.
Because we all have preferences in the
mm-hmm.
way that we move, you know, whether you're driving a manual car and you only use the gear stick with your left hand, or
mm-hmm.
you play a sport like tennis where you only hit forehand on your right side,
yeah.
or even just the way you sit, you might
yeah.
only like crossing your legs one way.
Yeah. Yeah.
They all create these patterns
yep.
and tendencies and preferences in your body that create unevenness, essentially
yeah.
asymmetry in your body.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how often people come in to train and will do one exercise on one side, you know, pushing the leg out to the side, getting the abductors, the hip abductors working. And they're like, yeah, this side's easy. And then try the other one. Oh, I can hardly get through it, like struggling hard. They're like, man, this is way harder. And it's like, well, there you go. That's a preference you've developed in your body through the habitual things that you do through
yeah.
your life.
Yeah.
So,
Wow.
yeah.
Gosh. Okay. That's incredible. And I think it speaks like things that in the medical community that we say is unfixable.
Yes.
And I don't like saying like, you know, you are, because
no.
we don't like to throw that word around.
No.
But there's things you can do.
Yes.
There's actions you can take to improve, get better, and, you know, almost have resolution in some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so powerful. It's just knowing where and what to go towards to actually make those changes and putting the effort in, you know, and making it fun as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which can be because
yeah.
you're moving. You
yeah.
know, it's good getting the
absolutely.
endorphins. There's so many other benefits to it.
Yeah,
Other than
totally.
just fixing structural issues.
Exactly. I
Yeah.
think that's something that I experience for myself, but I see people every day experience as well. They're like, oh, this is really hard. Like in the moment, it's hard work. They, you know, they're kind of a bit confronted maybe. And then afterwards they're like, oh, that was great.
Yeah.
And it's like,
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's like a natural high.
Yeah. It's all we need.
Without causing yourself pain.
Exactly.
And getting stuck in the pain, you know,
exactly.
in that cycle.
Exactly.
So it's cool. It's very cool.
But I want to bring up now athletes.
Yes.
Because they're a funny bunch.
They are.
I see a lot of athletes.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm big in women's sport and athletes. So, yeah, I see a whole range, which is great. But, you know, set aside that women's sport still doesn't have the credibility and the respect that we need it to have. So
Yes.
we'll put that aside for now, but
yeah.
I'm acknowledging that.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on it. What do you see to be patterns, either functionally, mentally, and how different are athletes to work with? And I know you were one too, so you're going to be biased
Yes.
here a little bit. Maybe take some advice from that.
I don't know. I think athletes, gotta love them.
I guess what I love about athletes is the drivers. Like they are
yes.
driven,
super driven,
has mental power of like
yep.
superhumans.
Yep.
They will just commit and do it.
Yes.
But that can also be a limitation.
100%. And that's exactly it.
Mm.
It's this, you're so driven, athletes, I'm speaking as like from my athlete years.
Yes.
You're
Yeah.
so driven on a goal.
Yeah.
You just want to do it and you just want to get there. And if you have a bump in the road, whether it be an injury or something or a recommendation that your practitioner makes to you that doesn't fit with your vision, you don't want to do it.
You're like, ah.
Athletes are horrendous at following recommendations.
Yes.
Horrendous.
Yes. You gotta use all your tools.
Yes. And you gotta speak to their vision. You got to be like, well, you ain't going to get there if you don't do this, because this bump is going to turn into a mountain, you know, if you don't deal with it now. I think that's definitely a challenge. Yeah, but I think also, I think there's also a few in terms of the way that we deal with injury, for example. I'm potentially not quite accurate anymore. They're a little bit outdated. I think obviously, you know, if you have a fracture or something like that, you definitely need to take rest and not do the thing. You just need to chill out and let your body heal. But I actually think there are some injuries where we're told not necessarily bed rest, but to rest it and not do anything, which actually can be detrimental. I mean, even now, when people get their hips replaced, they're told to walk on that hip the same day that the surgery is done, starting to realize how important movement is. But again, I think the quality of the movement is the part that really counts in terms of injuries and athletes, because you're dealing with that top, you know, 2%. And it makes it very obvious in their performance. So yeah, I think I've dealt with athletes over my career as a chiropractor and as a functional pains practitioner, and it's been really rewarding to see the kinds of change that they can get from both modalities. And because it is that top 2%, it's quite obvious. If you can if you can help them to get more of the result that they want, then they're very happy to see you.
Absolutely. And you can leverage that mental capacity and the power that they have mentally. Totally. And I think they can be the best clients or patients because of that. If you can leverage it right. Like, they're the most committed. If they can see the outcome.
I remember I was adjusting this jockey, which was super, he was so small. He was such a lovely guy. He'd came in because he had pain and whatever else, and he wasn't doing terribly well, and started adjusting him, and then he started winning, and he was like,
what else do you need me to do?
That's right. I will come every day. I was like, that's awesome. It's so cool to see you just smash it. Athletes.
I couldn't leave this conversation without mentioning athletes. No, I think there's big space for them to have this sort of work done. And high performance as well in any aspect. Like, I also have a lot of high performing entrepreneurs.
Cool.
CEOs and things like that. And they're, again, they are the hardest people to work with, because they're driven. But if it doesn't align with their current focus, then there is nothing that you can do in that. So very similar mentalities, I find. But also needing exactly the same style work. As everyone.
Absolutely.
We need that balance. Perfect. Well, you know, correcting that balance. Amazing. All right. So we are pretty much, this is so good. I could talk hours as I can with anyone, but I wanted to leave, I guess, the session with some parting words from you, either recommendations, what maybe a functional pattern session might look like, or what sort of timelines. Cause I think setting this up for people, if they're reaching out, knowing what they're up for is always is easier than you having to then explain all of that when they come along. So that's, I think, true. Maybe that, and then where to find you and what you've got going on and all the things.
Sounds good. What to expect if you were to come for a functional patterns session. The first thing that we do is, well, you fill out a form before you come, so we've got an idea of what's going on for you. And we go through that when you first come in, go through a bit of a case history to understand, you know, what might be bothering you, your movement history, anything else that we need to know about. And then we'll take some posture photos of you to see what's happening in your structure, and then get you on a treadmill, actually, and take some video of you walking or running or moving, so we can see the way that your body moves through space. And then we'll go through that with you somewhat briefly, just to point out, well, you know, this is what I'm seeing, and these are the things that we could be working on. And then once that part's done, we'll get into actually doing some movement and work. And whether that be myofascial release for the first little while, which is often the case, that I feel like myofascial release is severely underrated.
Yeah, I agree.
And needed.
Yeah, and sore.
Yes. And painful. Yes.
But we like that pain.
That's right. It's the pain leaving the body type.
Yeah, we like that pain.
And then, get into some movements. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the time, initially, the movements can be quite slow, detailed, So it can sometimes be a bit, for some people, they're like, oh, wow, this is very different. And it can sometimes take a fair bit of concentration. But in terms of time frames, the kinds of things or changes you can expect to see.
It's different, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's some obvious ones, but there's all kinds of changes. Like I had somebody come in after their first session and say, oh, I felt, what was the word they used? Essentially more calm within myself. Like I felt more solid in terms of my emotional states, which you wouldn't expect to hear after a movement session with someone, well, if you don't, yeah. Anyway, so in terms of time frames, you can see changes after your first session. Some people notice things that soon. If you're looking for structural change, whether that be to do with your posture or something like scoliosis or the way that you move, that will take more time naturally. Because as I said, we're habitual beings. So if you're only spending part of your time trying to rejig your movement patterns, but spending the rest of your time just doing what you normally do, it's going to take a bit. And that's where the lifestyle piece comes in. The more lifestyle change you make, the quicker you'll get a change.
The way you make it a part of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's pretty much what to expect. I mean, one-on-one training is the ideal. You get the most out of that, obviously. But there are also group class options and online training as well, or online courses people do.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And I know you're gearing up to go and do some more study in the
Yes. Yeah,
US.
going to
Big trip coming.
America. Yeah, I know. Crazy. Very
Woo!
exciting. I'm going to America next week. Can't believe
Is it
it.
next week?
It's next
Oh
week.
my goodness.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
For a holiday, but also
yes.
to do some professional development, going to the next level of certification for functional patterns, which I'm super excited about. Yeah. And
Amazing.
then, yeah, just working in terms of where you can find me, working at Functional Patterns Perth gym in Osborne Park. I also run my own business, Reconnect Chiropractic. I'm wearing the shirt.
We love the logos.
That's it. so I run that business from my home and I do chiropractic work there, but I also do functional patterns. So you can find Reconnect Chiropractic through the website, on Instagram, Facebook, all the usual channels.
Incredible. We'll
Yeah.
put all that down the bottom as well so everyone can see that.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed that.
It's good fun to talk about it in a sense of just moving through what we need to change for a society as well, because there's so much more conversations that need to happen for this and where people can take action. And it's just like pinpointing that flag in the ground where they can just aim for.
Yes.
And that's so important for our futures.
Definitely, I agree.
So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Revital Health Podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Revital Health, as well as our website, revitalhealth.com.au, for upcoming podcasts, workshops, and speaking events. Find out about specials happening in the clinic and all the show notes and links mentioned in the podcast. Please remember that this information discussed here is general information and it is not intended to diagnose or treat individuals. Please speak to your healthcare professional before embarking on any new treatments, lifestyle changes, medicines, or supplementation to assess your suitability. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you again soon.